interview with Commander Doug Ross, 12th of May, 1997. Commander Ross, perhaps you could start by telling us when you first joined the RCN and giving us a brief overview of your time with the Navy until you became CO of Annapolis in 1966.
68.
68.
I transferred from the RCAF to the Royal Navy and transferred again from the Royal Navy to RCN prior to 1950. In 1950, I worked with, I was in the VS, I guess the 881 Squadron, on Fireflies out of Warrior. We switched from Firefly 1s to Avengers, Turkeys, and I worked with Magnificent on Avengers for 2 or 3 years, did the Mediterranean cruises and Southern cruises with her. I also worked with the United States Navy for 2 years on Jeep carriers with Admiral Dan Gallery and his crowd. From the air side of things, I really enjoyed the part by being posted to VX-10 after my all these operational training. I worked with on torpedo trials. We worked with mostly Avenger aircraft, dropping bombs and torpedoes and what have you. Eventually, I went to de Havilland's as a project officer for the S2F, or the tracker. I stayed there and worked out of de Havilland's for under VX-10 for 2 years. I came back from VX-10 and went to 881 again as an XO of 881. And we worked on Bonaventure night and day for, I guess, about 2 years, maybe a year and a half. And we had, at the end of that period of time, I went to a short tour in Ottawa, I believe, and from Ottawa they sent me back to get some sea experience in destroyers in 1960. And my brief resume was the destroyers. I served a year in Chaudière. I was an XO of Huron for about a year and a half, and it paid her off as a CO. Finally, I commissioned Coppell in Quebec, and from Coppell I went back to air again and was CO of the VU-32, which is a utility squadron, training squadron. And from there, then I went from utility squadron back to Terra Nova as an XO, and we took her through workups and what have you. From Terra Nova, I went from I might have made a mistake there. Terra Nova came before VU-32.
All right.
Okay, at VU-32, and then I went from there to
Greenwich
Royal Naval College. At Royal Naval College, I went straight from Royal Naval College to Annapolis as CO, arriving 31st December 67, and took over the ship on the 2nd of tour to sea on the 2nd of January for foul weather trials with the helicopter with VX-10 of personnel aboard.
All right. So you took over from Commander Pierce as CO of Annapolis, is that correct?
No, Dan Mingy.
Dan Mingy.
All right.
The XO had her, Dan Mingy wasn't there. He and I turned over to each other in London, England.
Oh, I see. All right.
And then his XO was temporary CO.
So when you took over Annapolis in 68, what was still left to do as it related to the helicopter trials?
They were still worried about horizon bars. They were also had to do a few things with the haul down equipment. We were using wires at a rapid rate of knots because of training, improper training that the air crews. My first chore was we went to sea to test the helicopter under icing, rough weather, which we got plenty of for about 2 weeks in January. Then when we came back in, we went straight into refit. And at the end of the refit, we did work up trials again and got our helicopter crews worked up. And the helicopter we had on board stayed with us and worked with us for the entire, my entire stay during in the Annapolis, and we did very well. We worked night and day with her. We had no problems. Before we went off during workups, or right at the end of workup, before we did the workups, we did a 10-day stint in the Bedford Basin, proving the horizon bar, and they finally got a electric motors and gyros to control it properly, and from that moment on we had no problem with the horizon bar. It worked satisfactorily at sea the whole time I had her, had the ship. That's the only significant things I can think of as far as trials are concerned, with the, except the fact that we went operational and we had no problems.
All right. If we could just go back for a moment, you were talking about the first thing that the first trial that you carried out when you took over a CO was the trials for the icing, the foul weather. Were those local trials or?
They were. We were 200 miles off the coast.
All right, and this would have been dead of winter.
Well, it was January, the first 2 weeks in January, around Nova Scotia and that type of.
So were they testing icing conditions as it related to maintenance on the aircraft? That was what they were going
on. Well, landing on and off, and haul down equipment. We were in pretty rough weather, and we also had the we were checking out the. I don't think we did any night work. I don't think we did any night work. Because we didn't have our horizon bar fitted. But we did do mostly all day work, and it was in rough weather, and it was ice, and it was miserable, and it was filthy weather.
Stan Parker, former XO of Annapolis, when he was in the ship, was talking about some of the trials that they had carried out, and they didn't encounter too much heavy weather, and so they cross-wired the stabilizers and used the stabilizers to provide that sort of effect. And I think that the most roll that they ever got out of the ship, I think, was 15 degrees. Were you encountering more roll than that during the heavy weather trials when you were CO?
We wouldn't count. We'd alter the course to such an extent that we wouldn't get 15 degrees. I never... you didn't fly an aircraft off or on unless the situations were within a certain limits.
Right.
Now, our limits, we knew what our limits were on the roll and stability and pitching and what have you. As long as we were within those limits, we flew.
All right.
But we never, 15 degrees was, we never reached those.
All right. Do you remember what the sort of parameter or envelope was for flying operations as it relates to roll?
I should remember, but I don't.
All right.
It wasn't that much. I think we had it up to 10 degrees or 8 degrees or something of that. Because I could control that ship from the bridge and know in my little heart of hearts when it was safe to fly and when it wasn't. Because
right.
We were in the limits, and you'd always check with them back aft, and they'd give you they had everything taped back there, so... And then you'd say, I'm confident this course will put the wind in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
The wind had to be off the bow, and the wave action had to be off the bow. Or, you didn't put your ship in a dangerous situation by letting the bloody thing roll.
Right.
You smoothed it out.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Now, when you said that you knew in your heart of hearts, does that come from your experience driving ships as well as your fixed-wing flying time? So you had the benefit of both?
Yeah.
And yeah. But that may not necessarily hold true for other COs of destroyers that are operating Sea Kings.
I don't know what would hold true for other COs of destroyers, but I know I've landed on carriers when it was rolling 15 to 20 degrees. And carriers when we had an 800-foot ship rolling and pitching at 30 to 40 feet, you get used to it.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you came back from the local trials, the foul weather trials.
Went into refit. No, but before we went to refit, after we came out of refit, we spent about 10 days at the buoy in the basin.
Just before we come back to the time in Bedford Basin, what did Annapolis go into refit for at that time?
Routine.
Oh, I see. All right.
She'd been second year routine maintenance. In fact, we found they had to open the bearings up, and we found one bearing that had been eroded a bit, and so I was saddled with a duff bearing for the whole damn commission. You know, I couldn't go up to 27 knots, so I had to stick to 23 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
When you were out for the foul weather trials, who were the pilots embarked from VX-10, do you remember?
Yes. There was Zbigniew. Jerry Moore and Jerry Watson.
So do you have any recollection of what the complement would be on the Naval Air side? For maintenance and the pilots and the LSO?
Maintenance was pretty, I think we had about an extra, we had our own crew on board for firefighting.
Right.
Because they supplemented it with a couple of POs who knew their job very well and were training our people up, worked them up correctly. I don't think we had any more than about 7 or 8 people on extra.
All right. So that wouldn't be quite a full complement. I seem to have a recollection of the Naval Air Debt being somewhere between 11 and 13 people.
Yeah.
But I'm...
Well, that was part of these were ours and part were from the X-10.
All right. And were they with Annapolis the entire time that you were CO, or was there a changeover in the pilots?
Pilots?
Right.
No, the pilots, we changed second pilot. Or we had 3 pilots on board most of the time, and Goose McLennan was CO of the detachment.
All right.
And he had other junior officers come with him from time to time, and they changed, but he stayed, he was always aboard.
In the early trials, they normally had one pilot that was considered the main test pilot, the head pilot for the trials, like during Buckingham and Ottawa trials, for example. Did that same procedure hold true when you were CO of Annapolis?
No. Well, yes. I think VX-10, Zbigniew, I believe, and Jerry Watson were the project officers on that, and they stayed pretty well throughout the trials I'm pretty sure they stayed throughout the whole procedure from way back when. I can't remember when they started that
right.
program.
Okay. You had mentioned earlier about problems with the haul down wire, and what was that attributable to? Were you breaking the cables? Or
we were breaking cables. Not cables. We were breaking haul down wires.
Haul down wires.
And the reason for that was that it was just technique. Once you got everybody the technique down, we didn't lose any haul down wires. You know, we'd go afloat with half a dozen haul down wires, and first thing you knew after you had, if they didn't do some things properly, you ran out of wires.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to put a squelch to that and find out very quickly the proper technique, which finally evolved. We didn't lose a wire for months and months.
When you say proper technique, are you referring to the LSO and how he hauled the helicopter down and the rate and all that sort of thing? Or are you?
I'm referring to a pilot technique.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The LSO on the bottom, he just all he does is give the green flag or the red one.
So it's the flying the differences in the pilots is attributable to the breaking of the cables.
Yeah, we didn't break many though.
What was the difficult question, and not something that somebody would remember necessarily, but once the cable was broken, how long on average would it take to replace that cable? Do you have any recollection of that?
Depends how much damage it did when it broke, where it was wrapped around something. I don't know how long.
Would that be VX-10 personnel that would replace that, or would that be the engineering?
Ships personnel.
Ships personnel.
Ships engineering officer.
That's what I thought, but I heard something contrary just a little while ago.
No. Our engineering officer complained bitterly about the time it took. The man hours he was wasting with these stupid idiots that were driving airplanes occasionally and breaking wires. But
down in the machinery spaces.
It was usual, you know. We had a lot of fun with it.
Do you remember whether or not Annapolis had an operational, the first operational bear trap, or whether they were still working with one of the prototypes at that point in time?
I think we had the operational one.
I'd heard that Nipigon received the first operational bear trap, but I wasn't sure.
Maybe they could have had it. I don't know. I can't remember. Because all I know is that ours worked very well. We didn't have any problems with it. If it was a prototype, we didn't have any problems.
One of the things that that came out during the trials, the earlier trials, was the necessity of having proper communication between the LSO and the bridge, and letting the bridge know when the bird was down and in the bear trap and secure, and they could resume a different course and not be worrying about the landing operation.
I got away around that by having one of their pilots up on the bridge. He was in direct contact with the LSO and gave me that thumbs up to move. So a lot of times when you're in a screening situation, it's pretty critical. You know, when you have a carrier bearing down on you or another ship bearing down on you, you've got to get that chopper down and locked on. Once it's locked on, you're home free, and it's, you know,
right,
you move. And also, you don't want to move out of your envelope. You know, you put the ship in a position where it's ideal landing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to deviate from that until she is locked in.
In the bear trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't. That's understandable. Had they eliminated the system whereby they had a lighted panel in the bridge at this point in time that would light up, and the based upon a signal that had been sent by the LSO,
we
red
didn't
green.
Have one.
You didn't have one.
No.
All right. I knew that Annapolis had one earlier in her trials, but so that had been eliminated.
I guess. I don't know. I never had one. I had a body with a telephone line.
All right, and you prefer that system over and above what they had.
Not only that, your young pilot's got training in what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and he knew how critical some of these situations were, and so he could then go back and brief the crew and tell them exactly what the any situation was on occasion you'd have to wave these choppers off
mm-hmm.
and move.
And that was based primarily upon weather conditions in sea state?
No, it was based on operational conditions.
All right.
Very rarely did it happen. I've taken on choppers going downwind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The poor old Nipigon out there going upwind, she'd take an hour and a half to land a chopper on, and I would bring one. My crew was worked up to such an extent that we could get one on board in a matter of 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You're guessing my next question. That was it.
Yeah.
Trying to determine sort of what was the, if you can use the word average or sort of normal.
Oh, I don't know what the average was.
But an hour and a half for Nipigon is one example.
Well, I can't say an hour and a half, but a long time.
A long time.
I've talked to my old buddy, the CEO of Nipigon at the time, and he was always very envious. How quickly we could do it. And his bodies, admittedly, they weren't as well coordinated or trained or something. There was something lacking there in the leadership in the airman side of things. But we didn't have any problems.
Do you remember trying out any hot fueling during?
Yeah.
On the flight deck or while the aircraft is hovering above and
no.
off the flight deck?
What we normally did was send it to the carrier for hot for the fueling just to try it out. We didn't do any inboard.
All right.
Our little beast. We thought about it, but we never bought it. We'd bring her on board, fuel it, and off she'd go again.
And off she'd go. Was it normal procedure when she was landed on the deck and secured into the bear trap and before refueling took place that the aircraft would be washed down?
Yes.
And that happened every single time,
yes.
Did it? All right. And this was just to wash down the salt and
yep.
get it out of the
yep.
blades of the turbines and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
All right. So how long would it normally take in order to carry out that sort of operation before you could launch
not
the aircraft
long.
Again?
Not very long. We didn't... we could refuel, we washed down and restock, and I think we could get that airplane off in a matter of 45 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty quick turnaround
yeah.
time.
We normally didn't like to do it.
No? Why is that?
We only had the one really good crew aboard.
Mm-hmm.
So you like to give them a stand down between... what you worked with in a destroyer with one chopper, you'd like to work it in conjunction with the carrier. The carrier was providing certain spots for their choppers, and so we would fill in for the carrier.
Or oh, I see.
And we worked in conjunction with them. So we knew beforehand when we were expected on station. And every now and again, the Admiral, of course, would throw a boner and that works, and we'd have to haul them off early or something. But other than that, we pretty well ran a coordinated program with the carrier.
Oh, I see. All right. So would that vary very much for, say, the 280 class with the two Seakings embarked?
Oh, was it with the new?
The 280s that had the two Seakings?
Oh, did would I would think. Now that we haven't got a carrier, they're on their own.
Right.
They're going to have to somebody's going to have to coordinate. If you have two destroyers out there with two choppers each, you're going to have to coordinate the coverage from
one
senior
ship.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. You were talking earlier about some of the trials that you were carrying out with the 501. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the aircraft itself.
We did 501 trials with Annapolis as well, and we didn't have any problems.
Were you doing, now the 501 is the VDS, is that correct?
The big one.
Right, okay. The towed, well, what would be the current sort of towed array?
Towed array. Well, no, towed array I think is a little different. That's after my time. We were, the one we had is weighed about, I don't know how much it weighed. It was always a bit of a, we had to make sure we had it lined up properly and the ship wasn't rolling and wasn't pitching, and it was very delicate getting it back on board. Getting it out was easy,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have any problems after we got that sorted out. We burnt off a few rubber fairings, but other than that, they were replaceable.
Would that have been done against a submarine?
Oh, yeah.
Would that have been American or RN or?
We had Russians.
Oh, really?
We had Americans, Brits, and in our exercises, and we had the odd Russians.
So what, obviously the VDS was providing very good ranges.
Very good ranges.
Perhaps you can answer this. I've heard two different figures. For the Dunking Sonar, for the Sea King, they could lower the ball to 250 feet. But I've seen paper that said that the next model or the next version was going to be capable of lowering the ball to 450 feet. But I'm not sure whether we actually ever procured that
piece
of kit.
I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea.
So even with the Sea King and its capabilities for pinging, you still had the thermal gradient to worry about.
To worry about, yeah.
So
we could send ours down to the 501 down to 400 feet.
400 feet.
Yeah, and we got tremendous range.
Much lower than what the Sea King was capable of dropping its sonar to.
Yeah.
So these exercises were also carried out. Were they done down in the Caribbean or off of Key West, Florida, with the Americans? No.
Most of my operational time was done in the North Atlantic and off northern Scotland.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
In poor conditions.
Yeah.
And you had absolutely no problems with the Sea King and the serviceability or anything like that?
No.
Were there any major repairs that you recall that had to be carried out aboard
the
aircraft?
No, we were very fortunate. We managed to have Sea King go back for maintenance, inspections, between some of our cruises.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would chamfer it up and they'd get it back on board as we sailed out of harbor, and it was always in good shape.
During some of the early trials and local trials, they were only within 20 or 30 miles of Shearwater, and the helicopter used to return to Shearwater for maintenance and 9 times out of 10, and then would join the ship the next morning for the trials. But with the Sea Kings, I wasn't sure of what the arrangement was, given the lack of paperwork. What was the seakeeping characteristics or qualities of Annapolis like with the large superstructure of the hangar there?
I thought it was very good. We have stabilizers, of course, but we didn't have any problems with we could mind you, if the sea conditions got too bad, you put the chopper in the barn,
right?
And we never bothered bringing in the towed sonar. You'd bring it a short stay and let it sit there, and we could go. You know, you're unlimited in speed and direction. But the Americans used to envy us our seakeeping qualities. I could go past an American ship in heavy weather and just leave them sitting there, you know. And we were in the comfort, and they were open bridges.
Right.
And they had a lot of problems, but they envied us our seakeeping qualities.
Did they also envy the concept, the bear trap and the haul down, and the capability of the Sea King helicopter?
They did, but we also envied their missile capability.
It's a trade-off, I suppose.
Especially when you're playing games with the Russian Elan ships.
Well, with the Sea King and its capability, I mean, it sure gave the Canadian Navy a leg up, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Because the St. Laurent class were virtually a new class of ship, and they were being brought back in for conversion to embark the Sea King helicopters, and they were only 6 years old at that time.
That's right.
Pretty new piece of kit to cut up and spend millions of dollars on. Just check the tape. I've heard people talk about the handling problems with the Annapolis and the St. Laurent after they were converted. Not the Annapolis, because she was purpose-built, but trying to tie up alongside in Halifax was the time that it presented the most difficulty or problems for some.
Well, I had problems for the first short but I, after bumping a few times, I managed to overcome them all. I didn't have anything serious happen to her. Didn't punch any holes in her.
Right.
So I couldn't say that she was particularly difficult. As long as you drove it like a power boat, you know, no problem.
There was no problems. All right. What other sort of things was Annapolis having to carry out as it relates to the trials for the Sea King and the VX-10 project directory?
I'm sure they were carrying out several, but I didn't become involved, because any time they did, they'd come aboard and they'd brief they'd probably send one chief, and he'd be inspecting one specific item, or we'd house him, and that we wouldn't know anything about what was going on, because it didn't interfere with our operational. It was done in conjunction with.
All right.
Now, these were lighting. A lot of stress was put on lighting, especially around the hangar decks. And
like flood lamps or spotlights?
Spotlights, or red lights or yellow lights. And, the X-10 did a tremendous amount of work in finalizing the concept as a whole, and in order to make it as safe as possible for operational purposes.
Right. Okay, we'll just stop the tape here and turn it over.